that no spy gives his story to the newspapers for free, which is what he did. And we show it very clearly in the Hong Kong hotel room. On top of it, you remember the scene when
he turns over all of the records to the journalists and
we made
doesn't
a point
keep any.
And the scene is he kills, he destroys, deletes all the information that he has. He says, I have no more information. I'm traveling with no baggage. Because he knew he had no exit plan. I mean, it was really kind of he wanted just to get this information out, and he risked basically everything. He felt like it was over with his life. He was willing to accept arrest or death, or it was over. And that's what the point of that scene was. He deletes it. It's your responsibility now.
To leave it there, but I want to leave it on this note of the significant development this week, the 70th birthday of Oliver Stone. Oliver, enjoy. Make a wish and blow out your candle.
Congratulations on a long and distinguished career.
And that does it for our show. Three-time Academy Award-winning filmmaker Oliver Stone. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, thank you for joining us playing Ed Snowden. The new film is called Snowden. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us. Go to our website at democracynow.org.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 2016 Festival of Nations. The Festival of Nations is an annual event hosted by the Division Midway Alliance and is a celebration of cultural diversity. Saturday, September 17th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Division Center on the corner of Southeast 122nd Avenue and Division. There will be diverse culinary cuisines provided by a variety of vendors, along with performances by local musicians and dancers, such as Cuba de Son and African showboys, as well as other activities like disc golf, putting, and a large-scale Thomas the Train. That's the Festival of Nations on Saturday, September 17th, at the Division Center on the corner of Southeast 122nd Avenue and Division. It runs from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, and you're listening to K220HR in Hood River and K282BH in Philomath. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. We are dispensing with the usual theme music for each show this morning, just because we are in membership drive-in and we want to maximize our time with our guest, Jacqueline Keeler. Good morning, Jackie.
Good morning, Paul.
Oh, looks like your mic is not working. Go ahead, say it again.
Oh, good morning.
There you go. All right. And we are going to be talking, as advertised, about the Dakota Access Pipeline and many other subjects, including a couple of books that we have as premiums that you are, one of which you edited and one of which you contributed an essay to. We'll be talking about that. But let's jump into the subject at hand, which was highlighted once again yesterday by the protests in which over 20 people were arrested, highlighting the fact that construction on however many hundreds of miles of the pipeline continues despite the somewhat unprecedented decision by the Obama administration, or at least through the Army Interior and Justice Departments. So what happened on Friday?
Well, that was a very interesting day. It came the day after the governor had, brought up the National Guard to the Dakota Access Pipeline protest site. And the next day, they were on September 9th, they were waiting for the decision by the federal judge in D.C. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe had brought a lawsuit to file an injunction, to have an injunction issued on construction of the pipeline. They had filed the lawsuit against the Army Corps of Engineers for not having proper consultation on the project, which will have a huge impact on their nation, as far as drinking water supplies. And they really had no say about whether it would be put there right on their northern border, half a mile away, upriver, on the river. And so the judge ruled against them. His ruling was interesting. It was like 58 pages long, and
he recognized the historical wrongs, apparently.
Well, yes, he did. But I think that what he was saying was that the lawsuit as filed, and I got this from lawyers, was pretty narrow in scope, and it seemed to be targeting the national permitting process, the fast track permitting process that the Army Corps of Engineers has pursued. A permitting process that was really meant for small scale projects, but is now being applied to like the longest pipeline in the country, so they were challenging the Earth Justice Attorneys, sort of a project of theirs to challenge that, and they had sort of used the tribe to do this and not had addressed other issues, which the judge pointed out were actually much more stronger arguments for the tribe. Including environmental concerns, and so the tribe has they're appealing it. The Yankton Sioux tribe, my tribe, actually had filed a lawsuit a few days earlier, or maybe it was the day before that on September 8th, on Thursday, and basically, but their lawsuit is much broader in scope and does draw upon issues having to do with NEPA and the Clean Water Act and all sorts of, and the UN Declaration and the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So it's a much broader scope lawsuit, which we'll see how that does.
Yeah, let's talk about that. But first, I realize I hadn't properly introduced you, Jacqueline Keeler. You live in the Portland area. Your tribes are the Yankton Sioux, Dakota Sioux,
yes,
and the Diné, otherwise known as Navajo. On your mother's side, right?
Yes. So I think in the in our way, the Navajo way, you introduce yourself by all four clans. And when I worked as a community organizer on the Navajo Nation, I had to do that before every community meeting. So you introduce your, in the Navajos are matrilineal, so your clan is your mother's mother's clan, your maternal grandmother's clan. So my clan is Kia'ani, which is Towering House Clan, which is supposedly the original clan of the Navajo people. They call it the Leadership Clan. And then we are created from the heart of Change Woman, or the goddess. And then I'm born for, as they say, for my father's maternal clan. Well, they don't have clans in the Yankton Sioux tribe. So I just say Ihanktawan Dakota, Yankton Sioux people, and then I'm my maternal grandfather's clan is Hoshkanzo, which is Yucca Fruit clan, and then my paternal grandfather is also Yankton Sioux, so it makes me sound inbred in the Navajo way, but
nobody out there listening will probably know that.
No, saying the same thing twice. But yeah,
And you also, we have had you on before, often on the issue of the native sports masquetry, the cultural appropriation in a harmful way of native images and cultural representations. And so, but you're also a writer. And as I said, you had an essay in Red Rock Testimony. Three generations of writers speak on behalf of Utah's public lands. We'll talk more about that. And you're editor of an upcoming book, sort of following on that Edge of Morning, Native Voices Speak for the Bare Ears. And we'll get a chance to talk about both those as we go on. So we only have a minute left before I believe we're going to our first membership break. Just a quick line again about the so where is the Yankton Reservation in relation to the Standing Rock Reservation and the pipeline?
Yeah, the Standing Rock Reservation straddles North and South Dakota. So the northern pipeline crossing is near Cannonball, North Dakota, on the Missouri River. And the Yankton Sioux Reservation is in southeastern South Dakota, also on the Missouri River. Although originally that far north was part of our treaty territory with our 1851 treaty that we were signatories on. And also... the sites there at Cannibal, I was really surprised to learn, are actually Yankton sites. Those villages, the remains of those villages and burial sites are actually Hanktawan sites. And you have to realize that the Yankton people and the Yanktonai were the people of the river. The Missouri River was our home. And the Tetuan, the Hunkpapa, Sitting Bull's people, and the Ogallalas, you know, farther south, Crazy Horse's people, they were west of the Missouri River. And our territory extended all the way to Pipestone, Minnesota, in southeastern Minnesota, where we were the keepers of the sacred Pipestone, the protectors of it. And we kept the peace there so people could gather it in a peaceful way. And which was the Pipestone is the blood, the congealed blood of our ancestors. And that was brought to us by a goddess named White Buffalo Calf Woman, and to smoke and to pray. And that's what's used for our pipes.
Colonization has messed up so many things, among which the sacred geographies of the indigenous peoples of this land. We're going to talk more about that and many other things, but right now we are going to be joined by Joe Uris, fellow talk show host, and talking about importance of becoming a member if you're not already one, or sustaining your membership if you are one.
Or increasing your membership, who knows? Here's the deal, and you, if you're listening, you really know that this is true. This is a period of time when there's a matching opportunity. Double the impact of your donation without any extra money out of your pocket. An anonymous donor has made a very generous offer to match the next $250 in donations called in during talk radio. Double the impact of your gift by calling right now. This is really real. 877-500-5266. Look, you're thinking of giving. You don't know. Come on. This station exists because you support it. And your support makes this thing so good, so grand, so powerful in the Portland metro area. Won't you? And around the country, really. This is the time. This is the opportunity. A doubling of the grant. Make it now. 877-500-5266 or online kboo.fm. This is an incredible, valuable resource. That's the station. And you are an incredibly valuable sponsor. That's you. And no, you know, it's you got some people who give us money or businesses, but the reality is it's your money, your contributions, your effort, your volunteerism that keeps this station going for almost 50 years. And you don't want it to disappear or you wouldn't even be listening right now. So remember, it's $250, up to $250 doubled on talk radio right now. So make a contribution, 877-500-5266. I'm going to repeat that, 877-500-5266, and see your money double, or kboo.fm. This is an opportunity of the century.
All right, indeed. And you can call in and get a copy of these amazing books. This is a really unique opportunity. Red Rock Testimony, Three Generations of Writers Speak on Behalf of Utah's Public Lands. It's a limited edition. I think only 1,500 copies were printed. It was mainly printed to push members of Congress to protect these precious public lands in southern Utah. Anyway, there's an essay by Jacqueline here, essay by Kathleen Dean Moore, the great writer Gary Nabin, former Secretary of the Interior Bruce Babbitt, and many others. This is a unique opportunity to get one of two copies that are available, or there are two copies available. If you call in now and offer a $120 minimum pledge is what we're asking. And then again, you can get a special advance edition, which will be available in December. of the new book coming out, Edge of Morning, Native Voices Speak for the Bear Ears, which is the area of Utah in question. And that is for another $120 minimum pledge. This is a first, you'll be the first to get a copy of this book. Absolutely, maybe Jack, you'll get one before you, but around the same time. So call in at that number and offer your support to KBOO. So you're talking about the Yankton Sioux. So the issue. So will the pipeline cross near there?
Well, the pipeline is going to. You know, the Missouri River is like the longest river in the United States, and the pipeline is crossing a half a mile north of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's reservation border, and the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is adjacent to the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, which together they constitute the largest contiguous landmass left of the Great Sioux Reservation that was originally part of the Fort Laramie Treaty. And
Of 1851, yeah.
I think of 1868.
Oh, I guess so.
The later treaty.
Okay, yeah, the later treaty.
So it's about the size of El Salvador or Israel, and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe has also been accepted as an intervener in the case by the courts for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe case and lawsuit. And so those two contiguous tribes, which are two of the largest in our language. We call ourselves Dakota, right, in my dialect. And then in the Tetuan dialect, they call themselves Lakota. Because of the river, we got a little bit of a drift in the language. Our nation is actually called Osheti Shakowin, which is, I guess, what in English you would call the Great Sioux Nation, which is the Seven Council Fires. And this gathering up at Cannonball is the very first, encampment of the Seven Council Fires since the Battle of Greasy Grass, the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
One of the few that didn't go so well for the United States.
Yeah, and so the Seven Council Fires extend from the Great Lakes to the Great Plains. The Dakota are to the east, including they were largely in Minnesota by the time the Americans came. They'd been driven out of the Great Lakes region by the Chippewas because they got all those guns from the French, and so they are in the Great Lakes region, and then you go farther, and then of course the Yanktons and the Yanktonai, which linguists call us Nakota, but we don't actually use the word Nakota. It actually refers to the fact that we use the in a lot. So like in Lakota, they say Hokshila for boy. In Dakota, they say Hokshida, and we say Hokshina. Like my dad used to be called Hokshina Yachicha a lot by my great-grandma, yellow hair. He's naughty boy. And so we have these different dialects, but we all are one people. And that is the Osheti Shakowin. This Sacred Stones Camp is it's seen as the coming together, the return of the Great Sioux Nation, and in fact,
plus with hundreds of tribes, I think
the last count I heard was from Dallas Goldtooth was 290 tribes have signed on. You have to realize there are 566 federally recognized tribes in the United States, and tribes are not just. I think a lot of people are very confused about what tribes are. And politically, tribes are sovereign nations. And I think a lot of people hear this in tribes calling themselves nations, and they go like, what does that mean? It actually is true. We are actually politically still nations. And our nationhood is suppressed. The expression of our sovereignty is suppressed by the United States. And so the under... the treaties, when they talk about treaty law and everything, the treaties are really international law, and treaties are only signed between sovereign nations. I recently went after the Penn Museum because they were, the University of Pennsylvania was signing treaties, quote unquote treaties, with Pretendian tribes in Pennsylvania, and it really cheapens what those mean. They are not memorandums of understanding. They're not letters of appreciation. They're actually legal, internationally legal documents, and recognizing the sovereign status of the Great Sioux Nation, of the Osheti Shakowin. And so this is a what the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, by demanding consultation over, you know, things that could really harm, I mean, that is, as far as I understand, their sole water intake on the Missouri River, just 10 minutes downriver from where the pipeline is and could break. And they had no say about it. And they should have a say, you know, and this is what they want. And these sites are, they should have a say and a proper, research, environmental impact study and cultural impact study done on those sites as well.
Well, I want to stop you there because I want to bracket that. And the thing I wanted to say, because I don't think this is really widely understood, because all the focus is on that, the river crossing or the reservoir crossing, as it were, because that area has been dammed up, which is a whole other story that I don't know if people heard LaDonna Brave Bull Allard's interview with Amy Goodman, where she outlined the really tragic history of her people from way back when. Anyway, there's a very narrow focus on that because the legal hook that the Standing Rock have is basically upon historic preservation. Of course, they're trying to bring in issues of Clean Water Act and others regarding their water intake, but the fact is that oil pipelines have almost no overall oversight regulation. They're basically considered public utilities, and so they're basically exempted, unless it's specially put in place, they're exempted from an overall environmental review, environmental impact study. So I was really gratified to hear Bernie Sanders, like one of the few people of any national relevance, calling for an overall environmental impact statement on the pipeline. So there's almost no, and it's a similar thing with getting eminent domain. Eminent domain is based upon the idea that a project, usually they're, again, utilities, has some sort of public benefit. But this is a private corporation. So there's a private corporation getting the status of a public utility for a for-profit pipeline and able to get eminent domain status and expropriate people's private land for this pipeline based upon the idea that they have a public benefit to this. So if there's any real regulation oversight of the construction of pipelines, there would be much more ability of environmentalists and native people to have a say in what happens. And we'll talk more about that when we come back from this break for our membership.
Yes.
And the number to call is 877. What is the number to call, Joe?
877-500-5266. You know, people number, you know, very challenging. 877-500-5266 or online, KBOO.FM. What could be easier, really? And when you make a contribution, you're not only supporting the most honest, the most straightforward, the best, including Amy Goodman, of news reporting and local reporting, you're going beyond that. You're helping the great music scene that is Portland survive. Really, KBOO has the best music programming. I like to emphasize that because this is a time when we're mainly doing public affairs and news stuff. But this is a station that serves the needs of so many people. If you're a new arrival, if you're an old timer, you look around the city, well, what can I do? How do I know? KBOO will tell you. KBOO will share with you the issues of the day nationally, internationally, and locally. So don't miss any of it. Don't feel guilty about not doing anything about it. Instead, make a contribution. You know, $10 a month or $5 coming out of your account will never be felt by you. And the fact of the matter is that can get you tickets to all sorts of stuff, including Billy Bragg at the Aladdin. KBOO.FM. What a bargain. And, well, right now, we have a match. That is, every dollar you give is matched by another dollar by a generous contributor up to $250. This is the time. This is the moment. This is the hour when you and your contribution become ever more powerful. So don't hesitate. Don't dither. Don't blather, as I'm doing. Instead, turn your attention to the needs of this station to survive. Remember, we ain't got no corporate sponsorship to speak of. General Motors, General Electric, or any of the other generals have not turned their attention to us. Somehow, they don't want to give us money. I wonder why. But you do, and you know how important this station is, or you wouldn't even be listening. So, whether you've already made a contribution, you can make a larger one, or whether this will be your first time, this is the opportunity. KBOO.FM or 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266.
Yeah, and Joe, I just want to break in because, you know,
you can break in anytime.
I just want to get people who are regular listeners of this particular program, talk radio in general, mm-hmm. but this particular program, to step up and support the work that I in particular do, and support the work that we all the public the talk show hosts do. You know, Amy Goodman has to be applauded. I mean, she just stepped in. I'm just so in awe of what she did. She just stepped in at the right place at the right time, and with a lot of courage and a lot of integrity. And so, supporting Democracy Now. But you know, I don't know if people remember, I interviewed the woman that she interviewed, LaDonna Brave Bull Howard, 3 weeks. About a month ago, a couple weeks before she got on Democracy Now. And I'm not saying I broke that story, but, you know, I'm not sure people realize the importance of, you know, stations like KBOO in actually pushing these issues, you know, from below, as it were. You know, Amy Goodman pays attention to what other community stations are doing. People are looking for stories. Jackie Keeler here told me that she sent the story I did to Dennis Bernstein down at Flashpoints at KPFA. You know, this is a broader community, but the work that we do is important here. The work that we do is sometimes crucial. And so I'd like people to step up and support this program right now.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. And I don't at all doubt the wisdom of your interruption. I think it's very important that people realize that our programmers, who are all volunteers, are doing a wonderful job in keeping the public informed. Okay. And again, I want to emphasize something that may not be being paid attention to right now, which is the incredible good music programming that happens on the station. I also want to thank Jackie and White Salmon and a new member, Joanne in Portland. And I got to tell you, folks, the Billy Bragg tickets, they're gone. But we got a lot of other wonderful thank you gifts. And we have a matching grant of $250. This is the moment when you can really make your gift count, whether it's $40, $50, $60, maybe even $100. And also remember, you can have it come through your bank, through your credit card, and you never will feel the impact. So $10 a month, that's $120. It's easy to do, and you will not feel that you are losing out. In fact, you'll feel proud, and you'll have gained knowledge that you are supporting Progressive Radio. KBOO.FM and 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. This is an opportunity of incredible largesse on your part. So make the contribution now. Let the phones ring. Let the internet vibrate. And know that we here are really able to survive because of the generosity and the significant support of people just like you.
So I would just like to add to that. I really appreciate the coverage that KBOO has brought to this. I think that Paul. I know that Paul's interview with LaDonna Birdbowl Allard, who is the owner of the Sacred Stones campsite. She's a Standing Rock Sioux tribal member. This was the best interview that I read with her. I mean, I actually transcribed it and I used it in my reporting. I mean, just the depth that Paul was able to bring out in talking to her, and really, it just was really an amazing interview. And I got my start when I was working as a journalist in the Bay Area in the late 90s, and I did some stuff with KPFA there in Berkeley, and I've worked with them, and I. And when they were asking me for, you know, information about it and how to follow up on, Dennis Bernstein was messaging me, and I immediately forwarded that to him because I knew it would give him a really great overview of what was going on, and so I think that at the time that Paul did this program, an interview with LaDonna, there was not a lot of media coverage going on. We had 3,000 Native Americans and our allies camped out there in Cannonball, near the pipeline. And we already had like 90 tribes send out tribal resolutions, and there was no media coverage. It was a complete media blackout. We were really demanding that the media must report, and really KBOO and community radio stations and Pacifica were the only ones that came forward. This really, the coverage started here, KBOO, even before Amy Goodman really got involved. It really propelled that, her being there on site, taking on over Labor Day weekend. I don't know that we mentioned this earlier, but over Labor Day weekend, after the tribe on the Friday before had filed a claim to had found archaeological sites and reported their location, the pipeline, because the oil company actually sent its construction crew 15 miles away to dig up these archaeological sites, included burial sites, and also many other sites that are very rare, and so they went, the protesters at the No DAPL protesters are completely nonviolent, but they are being faced with violence. And in this case, the private security force that Energy Transfer Partners, the owners of the pipeline, brought dogs, and they attacked the protesters with dogs. They let them loose in the crowd. Six people were bitten, including one child and one pregnant woman. And there's been no coverage of that virtually at all in the mainstream media. So, and this is really the place that that brought the media there.
Well, thank you for that, Jackie. And you just never know. It's like what small effort will amplify things. So that's what KBOO does, is it amplifies people's voices. It gets stuff out there. So if you appreciate that, 877-500-5266. We do have a caller on the line. Go ahead, Francis. Hello?
I guess for not. The people at Standing Rock. And I went to the rally Saturday here in Portland.
It was Friday, actually, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a beautiful thing. I would also like to ask, I understand that as far as the political things that are going on right now, the only people that candidates who were there in support of Standing Rock and actually have been arrested or charged also are the Green Party candidate Jill Stein and her vice presidential candidate, Mr. Baraka. Were they not also arrested?
There's been a warrant for their arrest. And also for Amy Goodman, when that dog attack happened, she was there with video and she recorded it. And based on that, they've charged her for trespassing.
And are not Jill Stein and Baraka also, have they not also been arrested?
I don't think
they've been arrested. Not arrested, no. I think
they've been charged, yeah, but they haven't been arrested yet.
There was a warrant issued for their arrest.
Yeah, I think that we appreciate the work of allies and Bernie Sanders gave a really great,
yeah, he was there much later, yeah.
Yeah, well, he hasn't been on site yet, but he, in D.C., he did, yesterday he gave a really great announcement saying that we have to honor Native Americans. But I think that the focus should be on, I think the focus should be on Native sovereignty. You know, on the sovereignty of the tribe, that the tribe is fighting to have their sovereignty recognized. And the United States should stop the shameful history of suppressing that sovereignty, when, especially when they fight wars overseas, claiming to support the sovereignty of other nations. They should support the sovereignty of the Great Sioux Nation. They should recognize it and they should honor it. And I think that is the issue at hand. We appreciate the support of U.S. political candidates, but our own nation, the Aucheti Shakowin, demand recognition and demand a place at the table, and certainly demand a place in the media coverage. The coverage should not be about U.S. political candidates, but the coverage should be about Indigenous sovereignty and the fight for it and the recognition of it.
Okay, thank you very much for calling, Francis. And, you know, that the destruction of those sites, you know, I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you saw those articles, you know, saying, no, it wasn't ISIS destroying some cultural landmark. It was this pipeline company. But that's, you know, that's an appropriate, you know, people were justly outraged at the destruction of, you know, priceless, thousands of years old cities and monuments and stuff by ISIS. But, you know, where's the outcry and where's the, you know, where is the government actually stepping in more forcefully?
From what I understand also, that this land was actually, up until 1958, was actually part of the reservation. Yeah, it was illegally taken. During the 1940s and 50s, the Pixloan Dam, you know, construction, all a series of dams were built along the Missouri River. And in this, a lot of Native land was lost, the best farmland. They spent all that time forcing us to become farmers. And then in the 1950s, they basically flooded all our best farmland and put it underwater. And they purposely targeted, like in this case, they targeted Native land. And so Native farmers were about 2,000 Native farmers lost their land. And this basically disemboweled the farming community, the farming economy on these reservations. And there are a number of Dakota and Lakota reservations on the Missouri River. You know, you're going from Standing Rock, and of course, north of there is the MXA, the Mandan Hidatsa Arikara Reservation at Fort Berthold. They lost a lot of land, you know, and at Standing Rock and Cheyenne River, and then going down to Fort Thompson, Lower Brule, and Crow Creek, and then the Yankton Sioux Reservation. Those are all on the Missouri River, and they all lost farmland. And in this case, originally the pipeline crossing was supposed to be 10 miles north of Bismarck, North Dakota. The city, the capital, and where the governor, Governor Dalrymple, sits, and they did not want it there. They were afraid of their water supply, the exact same thing that the tribe is complaining of. And in this case, their concerns were honored by the pipeline company, and it was moved, cynically, I say, just north of the reservation border. It's sort of like a bully saying, oh, "I'm not touching you, but I am, I am certainly hurting you," you know. And so the energy transfer partners in Texas, their CEO Kelsey Warren, who is issued a statement the other day, basically saying they're going to continue with the pipeline and asserting that they had consulted that. One of the things the judge had said during his ruling was that 99% of the pipeline is on private land, and so a lot of the like NAGPRA doesn't apply on private land. A lot of these are federal rules. So when it crossed the Missouri River, which is a federal waterway over which the Army Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction, that was the first time that this pipeline really became, really had to be examined through a lot of federal laws, like the Clean Water Act and you know, the antiquities. I mean, a lot of these sort of cultural preservation and environmental laws came into play. The issue is that that there was not a real study done, and that and so that these were that there was not, and the tribe did not get consultation.
Well, and again, as we were talking about before the program, like, what good is consultation if you already go through the entire permitting process, grant all the permits, grant all the eminent domain, start construction on however many hundreds of miles they've already started construction, and then sure, there's this key point. You know, that of course, if there's a something that has to be changed there, you're going to have to reroute the project. So what good is it to go through the whole, to do all that and then initiate consultation, which they hadn't done
from
the beginning?
Yeah, you know, I in your interview with LaDonna Bird-Bowl-Large, she details how the tribe was ignored. They first had their first meeting in 2014 with the Dakota Pipeline, representatives. And the chairman Archambault, who has been on, very active in this, he basically told them right then that the tribe could not approve this. The tribe would not approve this. And LaDonna was saying at that point that they were cut out of the process. They couldn't get their phone calls returned, their emails. They were basically dropped off the email list. And she even claimed that the reservation was taken off the map. The construction map. They just took it off the map. And you'll see that and I was also looking at the U.S. Fish and Wildlife report on this, and they don't even have reservations on their maps. They have county lines, they have state lines. And, you know, the tribes are actually sovereign nations and have a legal status higher than states. That's why state law does not apply on reservations, because the tribes have jurisdiction.
Okay, we get a break in a second here, but let's go to our caller before that, if we can. Let's go. Can we go to our caller so they don't have to wait through the break?
Hi.
Go ahead.
Am I on now?
Yeah.
Okay. Hi. I have a question. Several times I've noticed that various KBOO people have referred to the participants as protesters, but they have also interviewed people, and it's clear that they do not see themselves as protesters, but as protectors. So I wish people at KBOO would not call them protesters, but refer to them as protectors as they see themselves. And in my view, they are heroes. And when I was 16, I worked at the Standing Rock Res, and that changed my life completely, 100% turnaround. And I have nothing but respect for those people, and they are protectors, and they are heroes, and we should see them that way, okay. Not as protesters.
Thank you very much for your call.
Thanks.
And I have been speaking and continue to speak with Jacqueline Keeler, a local writer and activist, Yankton Sioux and Diné or Navajo, and editor of an upcoming book, which we have two copies of for a $120 minimum pledge. Edge of Morning, Native Voices Speak for the Bear Ears. We haven't really gotten a chance to talk about that. We will in a minute. Also, this incredibly rare book, a very limited edition book, Red Rock Testimony, Three Generations of Writers Speak on Behalf of Utah's Public Lands, also available for $120 minimum pledge. If you call right now, only 20 minutes left, 877-500-5266. That's the number to call, right, Joe?
Yes, and I want to remind people, we have a $250 match. Every dollar you give, pardon me, is worth $2. And I also want to say that the Bear Ears are very important. This is beautiful Utah land, which, of course, is eagerly being anticipated of falling into the private hands. All of you, must know and must understand how historically Native American peoples, cultures of great significance and wonderful majesty, have been systematically decimated, not only by the U.S. government, but by state governments and private industry. That's what's happening right now at Standing Rock. This is important stuff, and we are the people who are paying attention. You need KBOO. KBOO needs you. Here's how you can help. And I want to actually thank Phyllis and Camilo in Portland, and Mary in Portland, and a new person, Joyce, in Vancouver. Look, you give money to the station survives. It doesn't survive without the support of people just like you. Won't you make a contribution right now? Remember, we got a matching grant, $250. It's an opportunity unprecedented. Well, I exaggerate, but a unique opportunity. KBOO.FM. That's KBOO.FM. Or on the phone, you get to actually talk to a human being. 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. Make that contribution and realize that it'll be doubled. You'll feel so good about yourself. Your shoes will never wear out. I mean, it's really cool. And besides which, we're talking right now about Native American issues. And I want to mention the barriers. It's really an important area, and the struggle for it is yet to come. And you need to be aware of that. And we at Cable will be paying attention. And I agree, by the way, with a caller who said, this is not protest. This is preservation. This is a struggle to keep things good, to make things better. Remember that the Suyan peoples have been ripped off of their land consistently throughout time. The region that's specifically focused on, farmlands were destroyed, forests were destroyed, all in the interest of a essentially modern industrial culture. Help us, help others, help us make the fight relevant. Help us build a safer, more sane world. KBOO.FM. And on the real phone, 877-500-5266. This is so important. It is, look, I'm not here because I think it's really cool to be here. I'm here because it's important, and you know that it's important or you wouldn't be listening. So right now is the time to make a commitment, $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you can afford. You'll never, ever regret it.
And thank you so much, Joe. And we are back. You know, there's just so much to cover on this. We're kind of going like once over lightly. I hope we've touched on some of the more important things. I just want to mention what happened yesterday. The Unicorn Riot, two people were arrested yesterday, and they've been, kudos to Unicorn Riot. I'd never heard of them. I probably should have. Now I'm paying attention, but they go to a lot of really hot places, whether it's a protest against the police in Chicago or this Dakota Access. They've been covering this a lot. Anyway, two of them, and they had their live stream apparently shut down. Facebook denies it. So anyway, I got a hold of them. It was on the news yesterday. I interviewed Unicorn Riot, and they said that at a critical moment of their conversation of a Dakota Access Pipeline direct action, Facebook's automated censorship system blocked our video URL shortly before two of our journalists were arrested on site. As we started to cover yesterday's direct action, our collective members immediately noticed that the full live stream event URL was being blocked from Facebook, et cetera. I think we've talked about this before, the importance of Facebook to these modern struggles, Native American struggles, where, you know, especially in remote locations, you know, whether on or off reservations, where cell phone coverage may not be great or other coverage, Facebook is really crucial. And, you know, the Facebook got all these kudos for standing up for people's rights to social media in Egypt and China and stuff. And here they are. They deny it. They say the link was mistakenly removed. This had to do with the link itself, not the content. I was in touch with the media spokesperson of Facebook yesterday, and they deny it. But there's a lot of testimony out there that they have been suppressing things.
Yeah, I think social media is terribly important to Native communities. In 2013, I worked on a documentary about the Bakken oil fields, actually, and I interviewed a lot of tribal members from Fort Berthold, from the Mandan, Hidatsa, Rikara Reservation, just north of Standing Rock, up the Missouri River, and
where the Bakken oil fields
are. Yes, they actually have a lot of oil fields right there on the reservation, and a lot of the community members were very concerned. A lot of environmental damage taking place. It was just very dangerous with all the water trucks. People were getting killed, even going to the grocery store. It was just not safe anymore. But the way when their reservation was flooded, it created this huge lake in the middle of their reservation. And suddenly communities that were just a few miles apart were suddenly like 100 miles apart because they have to drive around Lake Sacajawea, right? And so the community began to splinter because the reservation, when you live on a reservation, you live in a place that does not have a lot of really good roads. It's very difficult to get around. You have to drive long distances to go places. That's why the North Dakota blockade, road blockade there, right off of Standing Rock Reservation is so damaging. The governor has a road blockade there, and so tribal members cannot get to go shopping. They have to go all the way around, and people are quite poor there. The average income is just over $4,000 a year, so this has a big impact on them. And then the road block is definitely racial profiling, white people can go through, and you know, Native people can't. When I was interviewing the folks up at Fort Berthold, they were telling me that Facebook was the way they organized because they were able to communicate with each other quickly, hold meetings, talk about things, share information when it was dangerous to even drive to the store with the big water trucks on the road. And of course the traffic jams, there were huge traffic jams. It would take hours to get someplace. For these remote communities, everyone and their grandparents are on Facebook, you know, and they really, really use it. And my mom, she was raised as a traditional Navajo, and Navajo is her first language. And it's a great way to talk to other Navajos, to share videos in Navajo, you know, to talk. And it helps them reaffirm their culture. And in a way that it's not reaffirmed in mainstream media in America.
And of course, then we're talking about the urgent necessity of communication during these during this protest, and the allegation, the possibility that it was actually censored by Facebook is a serious thing. They deny it. I don't know the circumstances. There seems to be point to it being an intentional thing, but we don't know for sure. But Becky's been patiently waiting, so let's go to Becky before we go to our next membership break. Hello. Becky, you're still there, or do we miss you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, thank you. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to thank KBOO and also Jacqueline for being on this morning to talk about this very important issue that affects not only the people in North Dakota, but people in our United States of America. These things are happening all over. What's currently happening in North Dakota with DAPL is a gross violation of our civil rights. They're being disregarded. The ACLU of North Dakota this morning said that they're calling a state of emergency for civil rights because our civil rights are being disregarded for peaceful assembly and freedom of speech. Jacqueline is correct. This is an assault on our sovereignty, our treaty rights, our grave sites and sacred sites. They're being dug up without proper EIS, NAGPRA, among other sort of laws that they have in place but do not seem to enforce. It's a sad state of affairs when you happen to see your nieces and nephews that travel long distances over there, and they're there in prayer and unity, along with many other groups of people, all colors, standing together. Black Lives Matter is there. La Raza has endorsed. My Shoshone Bannock tribe has proudly signed a petition and a resolution to endorse. All of these people coming together, many voices going up as one. We can only hope for their safety and for change and true justice this time around. It's been a long time coming.
Thank you so much for that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Becky.
And I believe we got to go to another membership break or not. Yeah? So there's so many things to talk about. We really haven't gotten a chance to talk about more about the decision on Friday. How far in advance that was planned, how much Obama has really following this issue. Jacqueline has some interesting inside information, perhaps, or some indications that might point to the fact that they haven't really been following this, that maybe the information hasn't actually been getting the Obama administration. Hopefully we'll have a chance to talk about that in the last 5 minutes of this program. Right now, we are asking you to support this program. Yes, me. Paul Rowland and Wednesday Talk Radio, and also Jacqueline, who's been on my show quite a few times, and the work that she does, and all the voices that we bring to you here on Wednesday Talk Radio. Call 877-500-5266. And thank you to all the people who have supported, and thank you to those who are just about to pick up that phone and call.
Yeah, really. I want to thank everyone. Paul, you're doing a great job here. I don't want to sound like the former president. You're doing a great job, Paul. But you, in fact, are doing a wonderful job. And in fact, it is really important for people to make a contribution to this, their radio station. And we had a matching grant. I don't know if we still have it around. $250. Doesn't matter. You can make a contribution that really matters. You can give $5 a month through your bank, or $10, you know, a month. You'll never notice it. It's really, I can't hardly believe it, but it's true. And in fact, any amount of money is really, really welcome and very, very needed. If you would just go to KBOO.FM and make a contribution, there's a little place up in the right-hand corner. You push that button and bang, you're there. How do they say in England? Bob's your uncle. And on the phone, you get to talk to one of our magnificent and intellectually unchallenged staff of volunteers, 877-500-5266. 877-500-5266. What was that?
I'm watching old movies.
Wait, is your mic off?
Oh, well. Anyway, make a contribution today, 877-500-5266.
And we're back. Thank you, Joe. Coming up on this morning, KBOO at 9 on Political Perspectives, the guest is Clara Bingham, author of Witness to the Revolution, Radicals, Resistors, Vets, Hippies, and the Year America Lost Its Mind and Found Its Soul. That sounds really interesting. Also at 10:15 on Flashpoints, the guest is Native activist Tom Goldtooth. All right, a full morning of important discussions, as always, here on Public Affairs AM on KBOO Radio, the mighty Boo. Again, I don't know if there's books are still available, but we haven't talked about your books and your other writing. You're also working on a novel. You're really, and you had this a really excellent article just a few days ago about Tribal Dakota Pipeline Resistance, the start of something bigger. So you kind of go from essays about the land and history to current political events and back to your novel, and then here on KBOO talking.
And then I wrote another one called The Vicious, well, they titled it The Vicious Dogs of Manifest Destiny Resurface in North Dakota. That was after the use of dogs on the protester, on the water protectors. I have family up there, and I really love getting all the reports of what's going on, and I'm planning on heading out soon up there as well. With all my work, you know, what I'm looking at is making sure that Native sovereignty is respected, and our basic rights to our connection to the land, to our history. And that's what really ties with Bear's Ears. We're talking about in the Southwest with Navajo history, and also other tribes as well. And now there, San Juan County in southeastern Utah is a majority Navajo county, but it basically was found in violation of the Voting Rights Act. Rights Act last year by a judge, because they basically are suppressing the Navajo vote. And one of the commissioners there, actually the white commissioners, ran and got elected, saying that he would make sure that none of the county money went to help Navajo communities in the county. And so there's incredible, and these sites within
Utah is kind of like North Dakota.
Yes, in San Juan County, you know, you have these incredible. There's over 100,000 archaeological sites. They are, and there are only like two, federal officers protecting this. You know, 290, you know, thousand acre. It's this immense area, and there's a lot of theft going on. You know, of archaeological sites and vandalism. People are in there, you know, destroying them. And so these are sites that are important to several tribes in the area. They go back, you know, 10,000 years. You know, there's actual, like, you know, the wall, the rock sort of ruins in the build right into the canyon walls.
Right, like Chaco Canyon.
Yes, it's like Chaco Canyon. They're just like that, and they're all there, and they're all people are just going in, and there's no protection. So that's the tribe, the Navajo Nation, is just adjacent to this area, but they had already given up their rights to that land. In 1980, so they cannot annex that onto the reservation. And of course, there'd be a huge backlash by Republicans if the Navajo Nation is the size of Ireland. It's pretty large. It's got the population of Iceland. It's larger than 20 member states of the UN. I mean, we're talking Native nations being nations. They are nations legally and in reality. And so the Navajo Nation is not going to be able to annex that land, and no other tribe is. So what happened was these five tribes got together, they band together to fight for these sites. And their solution was to turn to President Obama and ask him to use his powers under the Antiquities Act to basically create a national monument to preserve these areas. And this was a way. So Native nations are using all sorts of ways. Native people and communities and activists are using anything they can to protect these sites. You know, any rules, any, you know, they're trying to make it happen and as quickly as possible, because, you know, these sites are being taken and destroyed, whether by corporations or by individuals, you know, and they're seeking to protect these sites. And any rational person would want to protect the history. I mean, we claim we don't know the history, but, you know, it's in the stories of the tribes that are part, and also in these traditional communities, you know, and so these need to be protected. And that's what my writing is about.
So that's in that book, Red Rock Test, your essay in Red Rock Testimony, and then Edge of Morning, Native Voices Speak for the Bear Ears. That's to be due out next year. But again, I don't know if people have already gotten those copies. Copies are or were available, but look for that here as a membership premium at that number, 877-500-5266. But we got to get out of here. We have only a few seconds left. Thank you so much, Jackie.
Sure.
Once again, really appreciate it.
KBOO at the Clinton is our monthly film series that takes place every third Thursday at the Clinton Street Theater. This month, the film is Chico and Rita, showing Thursday, September 15th at 6:30 p.m. Melao de Cuba, a Latin salsa band, will play, and the film will start at 7:15. Chico and Rita is a 2010 adult animated music and romantic film set in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Chico is a young piano player with big dreams. Rita is a beautiful singer with an extraordinary voice. Music and romantic desire unite them, but their journey and the tradition of the Latin ballet, the boleto, brings heartache and torment. Again, that's Chico and Rita, showing Thursday, September 15th at 6:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. It's 9 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. And here's what we have coming up for you this morning on KBOO. First, it's Political Perspectives. Today, the guest is Clara Bingham, author of Witness to the Revolution, Radicals, Resistors, Vets, Hippies, and the Year America Lost Its Mind and Found Its Soul. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, and then at 10:15 on Flashpoints, Native activist Tom Goldtooth on the Dakota access struggle, and we air excerpts of the documentary film by Greg Powell.